Welcome to the AT Pit Crew Podcast. This high-energy show dives deep into the world of sports emergency care. Join us as we explore cutting-edge strategies, real-world experiences, and expert insights to help you step up your game in emergency care. We've got the tools, tips, and stories you need to be ready when seconds matter. It's time for the AT Pit Crew Podcast. We have the green light in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the AT Pit Crew Podcast. I'm Ray Castle, and today we have Trish Barrett Grounds joining us. Trish brings a wealth of experience from the world of action sports and performance arts, where emergency care is anything but routine. A little bit of background on Trish. She has extensive experience in non-traditional sports settings, including action sports and performance arts. Known for her work in high-risk environments, she specializes in emergency response techniques tailored to the unique needs of those sports and venues. She's a strong advocate for developing emergency protocols suited to unconventional settings. So let's go ahead and get rolling with the show. Good morning and good afternoon, Trish, wherever you are.
Good morning, Ray. It's great to see you.
It is. It's great. You know, so just kind of for the audience is a quick background. So we were talking about emergency response and doing training. First interaction, a real interaction, was at the 96 Olympics, right? We had the venue out, that whole group of us, and we were doing emergency action plans and rehearsals during way back when.
So, no, back in the 96 Olympics.
Yes.
Seems like forever ago.
I know it is. I drove through Atlanta not too long ago and showed my wife, hey, that's where we were hanging out for a couple of weeks out at that practice facility near the airport. Again, it's great to connect with you, and I look forward to picking your brain today. Audience, this is how, if you've never heard the show, this is a fast-paced interview. Each question is a lap. So we're going to go 10 laps with Trish, and then we're going to follow that with a final rapid lap, or final lap with 5 rapid-fire questions. Have a little fun. And then we're going to get to the victory lane. So I hope you're ready to go. Trish, you're ready to roll.
I'm ready.
Okay, great. So let's go ahead and start off. First off is, again, thank you for being here on the show. And, you know, we talk about non-traditional sports settings, and they come up with unique demands on emergency responders. So was there a specific, going back in your experiences, was there a specific incident that shifted your approach to emergency care in action sports and performance art?
There have been several, because I have a habit of choosing sports in areas that haven't been covered by event medicine and starting with them. And each one has had a little bit, including one that sparked my dissertation subject with Taekwondo. They didn't have coordinated medical care for events. They had volunteers that would show up for national and international events. Same with BMX and skateboarding. They did not, outside of X Games, they did not have coordinated care, and a lot of them still don't to this day. So I would say simply being there because I wanted to come to the events and volunteer my time, and seeing that nothing was really coordinated.
Okay. So before I get into this next question, I should have said this earlier in the show, but your experience is wide and deep in terms of action and performance. So let me get you've done extensive work with Taekwondo, with championships at the national level, international level. You've worked with BMX, is that right? And now you're with the circus, so to speak. You can just kind of describe, if you would just give the audience a quick snapshot of what those big types of events you have covered over the years and currently do.
Sure. Like every athletic trainer, I started out in a high school clinic and college settings, but I am much like the athletes I work with. I get bored easily. So I look for challenges, and challenges come in areas where people haven't really done much. So I've been with USA Taekwondo for over 35 years now. I've been with AAU Taekwondo and a lot of regional events that go in the Taekwondo world of the various different organizations. I have done action sports, from BMX is my strongest, but I've done skateboarding, I've done motocross, I've done freestyle motocross, I've done snowboarding, skiing, a lot of those different types. And many of those outside of the Olympic realm and the X Games realm still don't have a lot of coverage. And performance arts, I was the first athletic trainer with the National Cheerleading Association when they built all that up, and then working with dance and cheerleading, parkour, trampoline, worked with US Trampoline as well. A lot of different venues that were interesting to me as a spectator that I wanted to become more involved in. And so it's progressed to there to the day now that I've gotten to where all of those are pretty normal sports for me to work. I've run away with the circus now, and I work with Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus as the first athletic trainer with the circus.
And so, yeah, so audience, you see, there's just a lot. We could go in about 15 different directions easily, just dive into one area. But with that, I preface that, or I ask you that, because I want to talk about this, you know, the challenges. So you've seen a lot of these different settings, and, you know, you've been intensely involved in emergency response and planning of those different types of venues and types of sports, which I know you know has its own unique challenges. What are some of the, so what are we trying to get, what's common? So what are some of the common obstacles you encounter across all of those type of activities, and how you overcome those challenges?
First off, it's the challenge that an athletic trainer is emergency response personnel, getting that ingrained in organizations and venues. But from there, being able to utilize people that are not medical, that are with the sport, they understand the sport. Like in motocross, I don't run right in immediately on that, because if the throttle is stuck, I'm going to get hit by that bike. So there are personnel that also have to assist me for my own safety. I'm going into places like the Grand Canyon, jumping the Grand Canyon, or cliff diving, or, you know, being out on the salt flats, or a 45-minute hike into dirt jumps that are buried within a forest. You have to know your surroundings and what you're going to have available, what is going to be easily accommodated for the worst possible, which, you know, unfortunately, I've had some of the worst traumas occur in the events I work as well, because they're very high risk endeavors that these athletes take on. But the sports I work with a lot of times are in areas where our standard spine boarding just does not work. When I have somebody wedged in between a winch machine and props, a ramp, you don't just move those things and you don't just directly spine board them. Being 45-minute hike to the nearest road or the nearest open area where a helicopter can come with somebody who's unconscious and who's bleeding. These are all kind of things that in these type of sports, these more extreme sports, you have to think about. You have to have more of a doomsday mentality to prepare for the worst that can happen and hope none of that happens.
That's an excellent, you know, I like to refer to it. You cannot plan for all events, but you can have a determined response. If someone gave, I quote somebody else who gave that to me, and I think that's just, and I use that a lot as well, what you just said. You can't plan for everything, but you have to plan, you have to have practice. You have to know that there's some unusual situations that are going to occur. And it's really no different. I know you mentioned about like working in high school or college. It's no different from working from a track and field to football to, I mean, we think of it, you have that wide variety of situations that are, or barriers or things, even the sideline and things like that has happened. When we look about, like the, you mentioned briefly about like being wedged in between, you know, just like a apparatus or in the woods. I mean, from, let's talk about extraction or behind the scenes view of what extraction looks like. So, you know, you have to have some specialized training. This is not something we rely on, as I know you as an athlete trainer, you are relying on your training and back education and training to handle that. But you got to do some additional, it's a specialized, I won't say specialized training, but you got to amp up your game, so to speak. So how do you train, because you work with both medical and non-medical, how do you work with training both the medical and non-medical personnel for that effective emergency extractions in those high-risk environments, like aerial apparatus or skate park, is an example?
Well, you know, I've done this with every new sport that I've gone into, where whoever I have available, whether it's medical personnel, whether it's students, whether it's non-medical personnel that are part of the event but not part of my medical team, we practice. We come in early. And the first scenario I always do is straightforward, very simple. And then I go into things that, you know, they don't think of, you know, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. And okay, how would you approach this? And talk them through it and practice it. With the circus, we actually have technical rehearsals where you do the full show so that we make sure lights, sound, all the apparatus are working properly. But I can call a medical all stop in the middle of those technical runs. Nobody knows it's coming except for key staff, and make everybody have to practice as if it's a real emergency. They don't know that it's not a real emergency in that moment. I did the same thing whenever I had my clinic in the skate park. Is I had a lot of students, grad students that came and interned with me there. And I would all of a sudden scream over the radio, so-and-so down in this area, bring the board, bring the bag, and have to work through that with them thinking that everything was actually an emergency. And then talking through afterwards what we did right, what we did wrong, how they felt about it, what they felt could have been done differently. And everybody plays a part in it so that it ingrains in them exactly how to do it. You know, in the places that I have worked, like concrete swimming pools for BMX or skateboarding, you don't just walk a spine board out of there. You have to have a foot placement. You have to have practiced how to get that board out of there. And it's gotten to where internationally, we'll tell the EMS, you stay on top, you stay on the deck, and the riders and I will get them out. And I have taught my athletes, as well as the event staff, how to assist me in spine boarding and handing off to EMS. Because a lot of EMS can't get down in there and get back out because, one, they're not athletic to begin with, or two, they just can't wrap their head around it. So it's easier if we just go ahead and have people that understand my theories of how we're going to do this work with me, even though they're not medical.
Yeah, or even have, like, I mean, so like even have the training, where it's just probably more, you know, see fire department versus EMS. They won't have, you know, that's a very different, so it's really beneficial, I would say, audience, you know, if you're talking about working with your emergency action plans, bring your fire department in, because EMS may not have, they might have the equipment, but number two, fire departments know how to, they know how to scale, you know, clap ladders. They had to think outside the box, and they work a lot with EMS. Thank you for sharing that. So, you know, with this, you know, you're talking about how you've evolved, use that you have athletes that you use as part of your intentional plan, and they know that they may be called upon to assist if needed. So obviously with emergency medicine's evolved, is how has your practice has changed in these settings since you began, and what do you think still needs improvement?
I think a lot of what has changed is going from exactly what I was taught when I was working football. You know, football is very straightforward when it comes to spine boarding. They're usually not in a majorly contorted position. They're not jammed between things. They're not in an area I'm going to have to climb into to get to them. So a lot of that, of sitting and figuring out the steps for first me going in, and then the one by one, the people that are going to assist me, then the people that are bringing the equipment before we can even do that. And it takes a lot of practice. I am known for every Taekwondo event I've ever worked, the staff and I come in an hour early and we practice scenarios. First day is a scenario I pick. The next day, some of the veteran staff will pick something. And then after that, then I'll ask a student, okay, you imagine something, you get to plan one for the next day, so that everybody's actually engaged in it. And it's not just going through the motions of actually doing the spine boarding. They all kind of anticipate that, you know, they're going to be thrown into the fire at some point and actually have to deal with that. And that's part of emergency management, is being thrown into the fire and being able to think clearly, to breathe, and not overreact. And that takes a lot of practice. That takes, you know, being thrown into a lot of things that you're not prepared for in order to be prepared.
So along those lines, Trish, you know, this also leads into obviously protocols over, you know, looking at protocols and how your practice guidelines and how those techniques have, how you adapt those over a period of time. So when you're looking at like the extreme, what you're talking about, how you practice and train, how have your protocols adapted over time, I guess, with your, does it change with the providers, or do you have, I mean, or are you looking at mainly as we have a general protocol, and depending on, in regards of who comes in, who you're working with, there it fits all of them. It's not, you know, it's more like a one size fits all, or do you do some more things more specific?
One of the things I teach is how to work with combatant athletes. And you don't normally see that in football, basketball. Their adrenaline levels are high, but they're not at the fear levels it takes for a lot of the sports that I work with. So I actually teach how to hold C-spine differently than what we teach as an athletic trainer in a general setting when you have a compliant athlete. I've been decked more times than I want to count. I've lost teeth because I've been decked by combatant athletes. And there is a different mindset as well as a different handhold that you have to do. And I'll use athletes or veteran ATs that have seen me get decked as the guinea pig, as we call them, as we spine board. And I tell them to react like you've seen athletes react. Don't just lay there. Be the real thing. And that scares some people at first, some that don't want to end up working with the sport, knowing that the athletes can be far more combative, can hurt themselves. I've learned to, if they're really combatant, I let go. I don't want to force them into a position where they hurt themselves more. And, you know, that's kind of the opposite of what we were originally trained. You know, it was you hold them down at all costs and get them on that board and get them strapped. And you may actually cause more damage by doing that. So that's a big mind shift that happened for me going into the types of sports that I work.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, I know when I do training, and I've seen this like for heat, like with endurance events, like heat stroke management is a big deal. And that you see the full spectrum from a mental altered status, from like you was combatant to being, you know, being completely unconscious. You know, you don't know what you're going to get, or they change as they improve. So I'm really glad you mentioned that, because it's something that you cannot, I jokingly say, you know, with the book Arnheim and Prentice or Class in Arnheim, we weren't taught that. And it's not a chapter in a book you can easily teach, but you have to know that it's an important chapter in overall care and for any provider, how to handle those combatant or controlling the situation. And I think you brought a great point that if all else fails, just back away, and then it'll control itself sooner or later. I'll with that as well.
Hey, Pit Crew listeners. I want to tell you about the Pit Crew Sports Emergency Care Course, designed to boost your confidence and skills when managing any sports emergency situation. In sports emergency care, seconds matter. This course is all about hands-on, real-world training. You'll face challenging scenarios that build your teamwork, decision-making, and critical thinking under pressure. What really sets this course apart is the Pit Crew Performance Report. You'll receive a +9-page detailed summary that highlights your strengths and identifies key practice gaps. It's like a car inspection report, but better. It provides those crucial elements that could make all the difference when real-time performance is on the line. So if you're ready to sharpen your skills and take your emergency care expertise to the next level, head over to actionmed.co/pitcrew to learn more. Now, back for more laps on the AT Pit Crew podcast.
With that, kind of gets in kind of another segment I wanted to ask you about is getting advice for athletic trainers. So especially in the non-traditional setting. So, you know, you've hit on a couple of really key points regarding preparation or preparedness. But you're going into an unfamiliar territory. Let's say, for example, I've been practicing for a long time. And I want to go work in BMX, or it could be another sport. What advice would you give with that? Kind of gets in kind of another segment I wanted to ask you about is getting advice for athletic trainers. So especially in the non-traditional setting. So, you know, you've hit on a couple of really key points regarding preparation or preparedness, but you're going into an unfamiliar territory. Let's say, for example, I've been practicing for a long time, and I want to go work in BMX, or it could be another sport. What advice would you give any athlete trainer looking to work in those non-traditional sports settings?
Well, yeah, I'm a great one for Googling it. If you're interested in a sport, you find out the organizing committees that are involved with that. A lot of the sports that I've been in don't have organizing committees. They just have sponsored events. And so you look up those sponsors and you talk to them. Be willing to volunteer time, which is something that a lot of athletic trainers don't do as much these days. But that was the sole source of me getting into what I did with a lot of the sports that I work, is coming in, showing them how they could benefit from my presence being there and just work with it that way. But it's also important to get to know the athletes, ask them what they do, how they do it, what goes wrong, and what scares them. You know, what's their biggest fear?
So as a separate question or an included question with this is, I know that you and I both, we work with a number of different providers, not just athletic trainers like physicians or PAs, nurses, physical therapists. What, in your experience, what would you tell them? Because they're listeners, is what, you know, we have a wide variety of listeners. What would you tell them from your standpoint as a coordinator, if they're looking to get into this kind of work? What do they need to, what are some, a couple of key points of consideration?
Well, first off, you know, I believe in diversity of event medicine teams. I don't believe that any one specialty should be the all go-to. It's called specialty for a reason. Everybody has their niche. Even within athletic training, we each have our niche that we're better at and that we're more passionate about. And you've got to learn to be open-minded. Don't assume whatever you've heard, whatever you've learned in your classes, that another profession cannot do certain things. You know, as athletic trainers, we can be that way. We can be tunnel vision that nobody can do the things that we do. Well, in reality, we've all gone to school. We all have the healthcare background. We have it in different directions. Yes, we have different focuses, but that doesn't mean that everybody that's there can't contribute in some way. Now, when it comes to budgets, that may limit me. You know, I am less likely to have a nurse on site because their specialty is not necessarily in the moment of an athletic event to get them back into the athletic event. They're there for the triage for when I'm not going to get them back. And so budget-wise, a lot of times I have to decide, well, I need a chiropractor, I need an athletic trainer, I need paramedics, I need an MD, I need, you know, a PA. Possibly I need a massage therapist, and then the other specialties kind of fall by the wayside. I also look at the specialties that may be less conducive with being with a sport. Neurologists don't like being at sports where people are kicking each other in the head or landing on their head. They tend not to respond in a way that's beneficial, but they're completely beneficial when they have landed on their head and they have that TBI. And I need them for referrals away from the event. So knowing your personnel and knowing what their strong points are, their passions are very important. And finding that, you know, we all think that we have a certain direction we're going to go with our career. And that doesn't necessarily happen. I mean, I started out determined I was going to work in Major League Baseball. And this is the path that I ended up on. It's nowhere near baseball anymore.
Well, that's a great point, you know, about how you bring in the niche areas for different providers. They can bring a collective group together. So I know when I do a lot of the large scale work like marathons, and I've got one coming up, you know, in January, that I have a wide variety of providers, and we try to put them, you put providers and even the non-trained providers, like just wants to volunteer, volunteering, you put them in positions that they can be successful. Uh-huh. And where they're most likely, that doesn't mean they can't go out, like somebody may go out into the finish line area or somewhere like that for a short time, but their biggest asset is their biggest strength, the overall operations. Like, you just hit on that very well. So that'd be the one thing I think that you definitely codified was interdisciplinary, put people where where they are strong, where they're documented, they know they're strong, and not where you think they're strong. And then they have to be a comfort zone as well. So thank you for sharing that. So, you know, what leads into, we've got people in place and you have all these different things that can happen. Let's shift gears a little bit, talk about mental preparation or preparedness, like before, during, after. You know, we know that, you know, we work in, it's a very high pressure environment that you have to have a lot of resilience from an emergency, from responders. And we know that, you know, you can have great plans and still have poor outcomes, or have, you know, that's the idea, is you have a great plan and a great outcome. So how do you work with yourself, and how do you work with your team to teams you bring in together to prepare for the pressure of emergency care in those action sports settings?
So I think there are several important things. As for one thing, I'm a big believer in breath work, of being able to control your emotions, control your heart rate, your blood pressure by breath work. I do, as an athlete performance manager, I spend a lot of time with athletes getting them to control their emotions through breath work. And I do the same with students and, you know, athletic trainers or physicians that come in that aren't exactly ready for the shock and awe that occurs in the sports that I work. So breath work is extremely, and along with that comes visualizations. You know, with the breath work, you visualize how you're going to do things, how you're going to approach it, and simply follow through with that. I mean, I am known as one of the calmest people in the middle of chaos. That didn't start out that way. You know, inside of you is not calm necessarily, but the outside and the way that you react has to be. And then after it's done, it's also extremely important at the end of a regular day, but especially after trauma, that you have a debriefing. And so you have everybody that's been a part of it discussing it. What happened? What did we do right? What did we do wrong? Same as our practices. What scared you? What do you think you could have done better? What will you do better next time? Because now you see how what you did didn't quite go the way you thought. And I'm really big on that. We do, at the end of the day of any event, we talk it out. You know, we are thankful for everybody that's there. We make sure that everybody's recognized and everybody's feelings on what happened is recognized so that they can get it out. There's a great saying that it's always better out than in. If it stays in, it festers, you overthink it. If you get it out and you discuss it, it's done. You can feel good about it. Whether or not it went the way you wanted to, you could feel good about your knowledge after that point. So I think it's extremely important that we have those debriefs and have those on a normal day. I mean, students in particular, volunteers, people that don't do the work that I do on a daily basis think that I'm extremely calm. But I've become that way because I've talked with people. I've explained to them exactly what my thought processes are when I'm doing these things and why, and listen. And sometimes they have good input that changes my mindset. Never be closed-minded about it. I mean, that's what debriefings are for, is to be able to share those thoughts and everybody come on the same page for the betterment of the athletes.
Yeah, encourage feedback. It's what you do with it's one thing, but you have to encourage it. If you don't get that feedback, it's not, you know, even after the, or 2 days later or a week later, you know, I forgot about this. Or like you mentioned, somebody may be talking about something. Oh, I didn't really think about that, or get a different perspective of how that actually transitioned. So, or how it may transition for the next event you do. So, which leads into, you've got to be you've alluded to this already, being a creative problem solver. And part of that's getting that feedback as well. You know that no event is ever the same, and you can't treat it like every football game. Well, it's a football game. It's this. If mm-hmm. you're treating it the same, and how is, you know, think about what that looks like, or your BMX events, et cetera, maybe a different venue, or it could be the same venue 3 nights in a row, which I'm sure you've probably seen before doing the same thing. It still creates different situations with that. So can you share a story, or you can recall, where your team used a creative solution in that challenging scenario?
We have had quite a few strange and traumatic instances we've handled over the years. But I think for me, when I'm in a situation where I can't let go of C-spine and what we thought was going to work doesn't work, being able to have that collective discussion. And we had this apparatus on the circus that's called the Wheel of Death, or the Wheel of Destiny. And it's a double wheel. They're on top of a 45-foot tall moving hamster wheel, essentially, is what it is. And they can fall from that, but they don't fall straight. They normally, if they fall from the top, it's usually as the wheel is going across the top and they get catapulted. So you don't know exactly where they're going. We have mats directly underneath. Very rarely do they hit those mats. It's normally going towards the spectators and the winch and all that. We had, right before we left on tour for the circus, we had one of our wheel boys get catapulted off the top. He didn't get a good grip for a Superman grab, so he's only got one hand half holding by fingertips and got thrown when he got to the top. And it catapulted him in between a winch and a ramp and lines for the trapeze net. So he was literally just stuck right down in the middle. Luckily, though, that's where he ended. One of my circus staff people saw him going head first towards big metal winch box and shoulder checked him. So he ended up in there instead of going head first and breaking his neck. But then once he's wedged in there, how do we get him out? And so it was a true learning experience for everybody on that one, because first off, circus has never handled their own injuries. They call 911. So we had to determine which spine board we're going to use, because normally we use a scoop spine board for as many things as we can, just so we don't have to move them as much. But because of the way he's wedged, we would have to use a rigid. And the rigid is a 7-foot rigid, which doesn't quite fit in where he was. So figuring out how we were going to hold him and move, and how we're going to move things that don't normally move, and then get the spine board in there and roll him up on top of it and secure him while holding C-spine, while he's spurting blood from his throat, unsure of whether it is a major artery, whether he's broken his neck, conscious, but whether or not we're doing the right thing. And we had him on the spine board and ready to go by the time EMS got there. But having to talk through that, having to calm everybody, you know, because everybody bum rushed you. I need everybody back. I need you to do this. I need you to do this. And they all understanding my mindset and already had everything that I was asking. So understanding how I'm going to go approach things is a huge part of the learning curve, even if they're not medical. And I don't have anybody else medical that travels with us. We have ALS that's here for shows, but during rehearsals, during tech runs, we have just me. And that means I'm working with people who are non-medical people to assist me to get them out of these positions on a spine board safely and ready for EMS or life-saving CPR if we need to, you know, bleeding, fractures, and all the fun things that we have to deal with.
Being a director, you're doing the head of the show, trying to do that with limited support until you get there. So you're having to do, and ideally, if you have EMS there, you can direct traffic. One part, basic critical incident 101. You got to have somebody who's in charge, and that person doesn't necessarily mean being providing care, being hands-on care. So with that, so audience, we've got one last question. We're in the final lap before we get to question 10. So as we wrap this up, it's important we talk about just having a solid emergency action plan. And what are the key components of the emergency action plan for non-traditional sports? Or is there this outline of some of the key things that you see for those non-traditional sports and how to ensure your teams are prepared?
So circus didn't have any emergency action plans. BMX didn't have any emergency action plans. And so you're going into this somewhat blindly whenever you're creating these things. And you have an idea of what you think should happen, but that's not necessarily what's going to happen. So I have spent a lot of time asking athletes, what has gone wrong for you? What can go wrong? What have you seen go wrong? Why has it gone wrong? And how have you dealt with it? I spent the first 5 weeks I was with circus sitting and watching the shows, every rehearsal, talking to them of these things. And I also looked for fail videos, you know, the crashes of BMX, crashes from the wheel, bad trapeze, you know, high wire falls, all these things to see what can happen, why it happens, and how you can respond to it. And I call it my doomsday prepping. I think of the very worst that can go wrong and figure out how to manage that, and everything lesser that happens is easier. So you figure out the worst scenario that can happen, and it may never happen, hopefully never happens, but you're prepared for it. And everything else is like, it's just this, it's not this. You know, things like, what do I have available? I've been out in the middle of the woods with BMX and I have a spine board and we have a femur fracture. Okay, I don't have EMS out there. How are we going to do the road is 45 minutes hike to get out. There's no opening for life flight to come in. What do we have? You know, using 2x4s to splint a leg, being able to think on the fly as well as being prepared are crucial for these types of sports?
Well, I think to add on to that, you think about, you mentioned about for air flight, people have to realize you have to, then you call an evacuation, like air evac, and, you know, they have to canopy, they have to go down, but you have to have a canopy spacing around trees just to be able to drop in. You just can't, they're not going to lower somebody down into a boom like you may see on TV. It doesn't work that way. Uh-huh. It has to be safe for the provider and for them to move that patient out. So,
I've even done events on cruise ships where, you know, you have to think about, okay, this is a sport where they kick each other in the head, or, you know, they do the Wheel of Destiny on cruise ships. They do BMX on cruise ships. How are we going to manage this with what staff is on site besides the little staff I have, and where's the closest place we can get them to if we have to fly them out?
Excellent, excellent points there. So, all right, audience and Trish, we are in the final lap. You get to have some fun here for five rapid-fire questions. So, all right, question number one, Trish, you ready?
Sure.
Favorite place you've worked an event?
I'd have to say it is a contest called Feast. And their biggest stop is Montpellier, France. And you have over 1 million spectators and over 1,000 different athletes in about 17 different sports. And it's the middle of chaos, and I function best in the middle of chaos. So the people are great. They're unlike a lot of times in traditional sports, the way I felt, where you are not as appreciated. You're expected to do things. You're not as appreciated. They appreciate you so much. I have been paid in bottles of wine and vodka. I've had full meals. It's a lot of fun. And besides the fact the city's a beautiful city with a lot of history.
Excellent. So next question. Favorite TV series?
You know, that's a hard one for me. I don't watch TV much. And when I have watched it, a lot of it was with my mother, which was things like Criminal Minds, NCIS. Oh. But I also like Madam Secretary. So, you know, a little bit different problem solving than what I normally do.
Good binge watching shows.
Yes.
And when you're able to watch, if you do watch. So downtime. Okay. So question three, who's your favorite cartoon character growing up?
My favorite cartoon character was Goofy, because I think Goofy was way more intelligent than anybody ever gave him credit for, but he laughed everything off. And I kind of feel that way sometimes.
That's a great one right there. So favorite dessert?
A big dessert person. I guess it would have to be like lemon bars or key lime bars, you know, something sweet, small, because I'm not a big sugar person.
Yeah. Okay. And then last question, what's a fun fact about Trish that we may not know?
Most people probably don't know that I am the only girl with five older brothers with parents that both worked in the FBI.
That's an interesting fact.
I grew up with a lot of conspiracy theories.
Yes. And then some. So, Trish, thank you so much for sharing your insights in the unique world of emergency care in action sports. Before we wrap up, what's the one message or take-home message you would like your listeners to take away from today's episode?
I would say, you know, find your passion, something that you really love in your career, whether that's as an athletic trainer, physician, paramedic, whatever, and make it your own. Do your research, be relentless in learning what it is that you can do for this position, you know, and own it, you know, make it your own. Practice as you perform. Make yourself the authority on working that just because you love it. You love the athletes, you love the sport, whatever it is. But be passionate about it. Don't just go through the motions.
Excellent. Thank you, Trish. And that's a great way to end it. Find your passion and you'll never work a day again. So, thank you. Thank you for today. Joining us today on today's AT Pit Crew podcast. Thanks again to Trish Bear Grounds for joining us and sharing valuable insights on emergency care. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share this episode with your community. And if you love what you heard, don't forget to leave a review. Until next time, we're out of here.
Hey, it's Claire here, and I've got to tell you about something to get really excited about, CE Unleashed. It's not that easy to find on-demand, high-quality sports emergency care courses. CE Unleashed is 100% focused on sports emergency care, with CEU opportunities led by experts. And the best part It's only $4.99 a year. That's 50-plus CEU courses for less than $4.99. For organizations with 25 or more users, there are even bigger savings. CE Unleashed can be a game changer for your whole crew. Here's something you'll really love. You're already tuning into the AT Pit Crew podcast. Well, you can take it a step further. After listening to an episode, you can head over to CE Unleashed to earn CEU credits. You can even watch the episodes there if you prefer. It's seamless, convenient, and just makes sense. If continuing education and professional growth are important to you, CE Unleashed is where you need to be. Give it a shot and take your expertise to the next level. Thank you for joining us on the AT Pit Crew podcast. We encourage you to like, subscribe, and join our community. For more information about this podcast show, visit www.actionmed.co/podcast. This show is a production of Action Medical Consultants, LLC. The medical information provided within this program reflects the opinions of the hosts and guests and is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It should not be considered as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the guidance of your healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment.